You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Welcome to show number 287. Today is Thursday, January 15, 2015, and my name is Steve. No Hammy tonight, but I am joined by Curtis. Kurt, it's our first show of the new year, and there's a lot to talk about. So in tonight's show, we'll discuss John Smoltz's Hall of Fame election, a review of all the moves the team made in December, including A.J. Pierzynski and Jason Grilli. But first, Kurt, a move that I was convinced would not happen has happened. The Braves traded Evan Gattis yesterday, plus another pitcher they threw in that I don't remember, to the Houston Astros for two high-level prospects and a decent throw-in. So a quick recap of the pieces. Pitcher Mike Foltynewicz, huge fastball, decent breaking ball and changeup, needs to figure out some command issues. Third baseman Rio Ruiz, good glove, doubles power, hopefully develops, you know, more power. And then pitcher Andrew Thurman, who has the potential for major league stuff. So, Kurt, you know, Gattis was the last offensive piece, minus Freddie Freeman, of course. What do you think about the return we got?
Well, it's one of these trades, you know, that we've seen that they've made with Upton, with Hayward, that on paper it's a move that you really feel like you got to make if this is kind of the direction that you're going. And for a guy who, frankly, came completely out of the blue, was something like a 23rd round pick and was this guy who, you know, was, what, 26 years old now, has had a couple of knee surgeries, has had back problems. I mean, I love Evan Gattis, but to get this return for effectively a DH, which is what he is, right, it's pretty solid.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, Foltynewicz is going to compete for the fifth starter spot. Ruiz could be the third baseman of the future when we finally rid ourselves of awful Chris Johnson. And Thurman, from everything I've read, as a throw-in, and that's really how he's being described, is a decent-looking throw-in. I mean, not really an afterthought. This guy could pitch in the majors as well. And I'm with you. You know, we've talked about the sort of it was just a foregone conclusion that Betancourt would be the starting catcher. Gattis was out of the catcher's position. And part of me has not quite understood that, given the plus bat you would get in the catcher's position. And I guess they just felt like you couldn't keep Betancourt down and Gattis was not going to hold up. I mean, that may really be the big piece, as you spoke about his injuries, that he was just not going to be a dependable catcher, given the beating that that position puts on a player. And so, yeah, we turned a DH into these three pieces. And I think it's, you know, it's fantastic, really. It's just the remake of the farm system, which we'll get to in a minute. I mean, took another huge step forward yesterday.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, you could argue that they got as much for, or more even, for Gattis as they did for Upton.
Yeah, which,
at least potential and, you know, precipice of being major league ready players type of stuff.
Right. I mean, Foltynewicz is the most interesting guy. He, you know, he hits upwards of 100 and he's got two other pitches. He has control and command issues. But if Roger can figure that out, then this guy is, you know, a three easy. And yeah, this year,
they said that, I read something that he's got a bad slot with his changeup, that it's noticeable between his fastball and his changeup. And they said, well, that works, you know, in double A, but it's going to be real easy for major league hitters, to pick up on such a slight difference on the change between the two pitches. So obviously that's an issue that he's going to have to work with. And when you have that kind of inconsistency with your delivery, that obviously is going to lend itself to being wild. So, right. Yeah, I mean, you know, Roger is the master. So he's got a lot of pieces, and I mean, obviously they're going to have an active
Camp
look
Roger.
At all the, yeah, and farm Roger to work with all these guys coming back from Tommy John. He is one of the few that isn't, that we've gotten.
Right.
But you know, I mean, if potential is astonishing for what they've been able to pull in. Now reality is a completely different matter.
Yeah. So, Kurt, you know, yesterday on Twitter, as news of the Gattis move broke, everyone was like, well, everyone, there were people on Twitter who was like, oh, Trudasiewicz or Cunningham, they're going to be in left. Or some people were actually throwing Constanza around, but probably just to troll me, I think. But don't you agree that they sign a left fielder, that it's not going to be one of those guys?
But haven't they signed outfielders? I mean, they've got Toscano, the Cuban guy. They've got Almonte, the guy they got from the Yankees. I don't see that they're going to do that. Why would they do that? Why would they go? I mean,
because I think they signed someone more proven that hopefully maybe, you know, Aoki being the guy that is being mentioned the most and that I'm thinking of, who could not only, you know, be our left fielder, but could also lead off.
Yeah.
I just don't believe those guys. I mean, they're pretty fringy. You know, I just can't believe, given all the offense that has walked out the door, that they don't, in the mold of the Markakis signing, except theoretically, hopefully 3 years shorter, you know, a solid ball player who can man left field, you know, take up some of the slack from BJ's defensive woes and also be another solid low strikeout, high contact bat in the line.
Yeah, well, I would offer that every single position player that they brought in, save Markakis, maybe to some regard, is pretty fringy. Kiaspo, all these guys, these are fringe players. These are bench players that they're going to have to lean on.
I mean, I guess it just seems like with the, you know, with the Wandy Rodriguez signing and now Foltynewicz in the fold, that where I thought they were going to spend some of the, what it sounds like is $10 million left to sign a veteran, you know, pitcher to fill that fifth spot, I think they're going to spend that on a left fielder, or at least some of it. That is my guess.
Jeff Francoeur.
He's out there. All right, so Kurt, let's step back and look at the big picture, given that all the moves are probably done. I mean, Hart came out today. Well, we'll talk about Kimbrel in a second. But Hart came out today and said they're not moving Kimbrel. The Johnson ship seems to have sailed. I don't think that's happening. Clearly, BJ is going nowhere. So I don't think there's any more enormous moves going on. So are you happy with the job that Hart has done to rebuild the farm system?
I'm not 100% sure. There's just so much damaged goods that we've taken on. And so many of these guys were once something, 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 you know?
Yeah.
I don't feel like we really got any surefire prospects through any of this. Maybe Shelby Miller, but I mean, he's already proven himself on the major league level. So beyond that, there are question marks attached to literally every single guy that we've gotten. They've either coming, I mean, the joke continues, but I mean, I looked through, we were talking before the show, and AJC had a slideshow of some of the moves they made, and I wasn't even aware of some of these. But even the guys I wasn't aware of, the pitchers are coming back from Tommy John surgery. I mean, it is hilarious. And, you know, I mean, obviously the scouting reports, they don't know. I mean, they know more than I do, but this is a lot of projection and stuff like that. But you never, none of these I read that, oh, this guy is a surefire. This guy is a sure thing. This guy is going to be, I mean, it's a lot of his highest ceiling is a bench player. You know, so I see what they had to do, but and of course I empathize with what they had to do, and they've taken their farm system from one of the worst to now top 10, according to many sources. But in the grand scheme of things, how much does that matter, I guess, is my question. I mean, you have volume and you've poached a bunch of guys from some other systems, but guys that other systems were willing to give up on.
Yeah, look, it was Hart clearly took a sort of, you know, damaged goods approach with a lot of these guys, banking on some of them hitting and getting, you know, some real high ceiling out of this stuff. I mean, Foltynewicz, right, great stuff, but control issues. Manny Banuelos was supposed to be the next big thing in the Yankees organization, hit by injury, we don't know. the, you know, Fried that came over in the Justin Upton trade, again, coming off of Tommy John.
Questions about his maturity. I mean,
right.
Yeah.
You know, on the other hand, though, we have a lot of pieces now. We have some depth. I mean, we don't, you know, we still, from a position player's perspective, don't have a ton of depth. But, you know, we have a center fielder now in Malik Smith and, you know, a possible third baseman in Dustin Peterson. That was also part of the Justin Upton trade.
Or,
you know, Tyrell Jenkins that came over with Shelby Miller as part of the Hayward trade. I mean, I'm pretty happy with it. It does feel like the cupboard is not bare anymore. And some really exciting things could happen in the next couple of years, especially with the starters.
Sure. And you need to, I mean, you need honest, I mean, it sounds silly, but you, of course you need bench players too. So, I mean, if you can get solid contributions from these guys on a major league level, I mean, clearly they're going to have to address some of these offensive problems whenever it might be that they decide that they want to start fielding a real major league baseball team again. And they're not going to be filled by the guys they have in-house, I don't believe. You're going to have to go out and get some outfielders in a couple of years from now.
Right. Well, in a year from now, they may be willing to eat BJ's salary for one thing.
Sure.
Right. You know. So, all right. So speaking of fielding an actual major league team, you know, before the Gattis trade, even though he's really, you know, a two-win player, I was able to convince myself that the Braves were still trying to remain competitive in 2015. But clearly with the Gattis move, we're in fire sale territory. So why keep Kimbrel at this point? Now, I'll give you John Hart's answer, which was there were articles about it from Bowman and DOB today that he thinks the Braves are going to be competitive. It was a bad offense last year. You know, it's not a perfect offense this year, but we've traded strikeouts for contact, and we want to keep Kimbrel. He's not going anywhere. But I don't know, man. I was not a fan of the four-year extension to begin with. Closers are so volatile, right? He's signed through 17, which is just the first year in the new stadium, and there's a club option for 18. Is Kimbrel going to be the best closer in baseball with two more seasons under his belt before they get to Cobb County? You know, maybe part of it is they realize that they'll sell 5% more tickets with Kimbrel in the back of the rotation and maybe, you know, four games more, you know, one because of Kimbrel. But, God, it really feels like you could get a lot for him. And, you know, not only just prospects, but, you know, a starter as well.
Well, is there any chance that his value is even higher at the trade deadline?
That's interesting. Maybe. It's not like he becomes a half a year guy. You've got him under control through 18. If someone feels like that's the one piece they need to really push, I don't know, maybe. Yeah, it's an interesting concept. I hadn't thought about that. So you're saying it's the halfway point and the Braves have won, you know,
12
games. Yeah. Boy, I hadn't thought about that possibility. That would be interesting if things are really in the tank. If that kind of conversation starts again.
Well, and the best part about it is when and if that trade happens, the Braves front office will tell you that that was their plan the whole time.
Yeah, maybe. So, Kurt, I got to get back to this because it just every day it just seems crazier. Given the complete teardown that's happening now, I really have little explanation for the Markakis signing. It's the one doesn't look like anything else that's happened this offseason move. So do you have any explanation for it?
I do not. I talked about it, I guess, a few shows ago that he's a guy that you bring in as the final piece, you know, that you need an outfielder. And that's the last piece you need to make a championship push. He's not
right,
a guy.
He's a solid dude, a veteran, and he'll bring all those intangibles. Yeah.
Yeah. And a good baseball player, good, decent defense, you know, all those things, gets on base, all those types of things would be perfect as the final piece in the solution. I mean, if he had been brought in instead of BJ, you know, we would have all been rejoicing over it now. But I don't get it at all. I don't understand it. Maybe they're hoping that with this young team, and that's the thing. I mean, that's I guess that's the interesting thing about all this is that they really have no faith in had no faith in the future of this team because this was the second youngest team in baseball last year. So
we weren't the Phillies.
Yeah, it's not, that's exactly right. It's not like we're the Phillies and all these guys are saddled with these huge contracts and are old and can't contribute anymore. This was a really young team that they've completely dismantled. And so maybe they're hoping that he's an older guy that, you know, maybe a good leadership guy, and maybe that'll rub off on some of these guys. Maybe they're hoping he will work with BJ. I mean, I'm completely grasping at straws here, so I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, and we talked about this when the signing happened, that clearly the front office just couldn't bear to see another strikeout. And that was one thing that made them gravitate toward Markakis. But even all the intangibles and all that, it's still... with the teardown, it just doesn't explain the 2 years too long contract. Really, 3 years too long, but... All right, so, Kurt, we attributed keeping Freddie, you know, back when the, you know, the big press conference happened, when really they barely announced that Wren was fired, but they were announcing the big three coming in and all that. We attributed the keeping of Freddie to the fact that Bobby was protecting him. Remember in that press conference, Bobby gave him a very public... stamp of approval, is doing an amazing job. But do you think now it's more likely they just didn't want to saddle the new guy with this undermanned roster that will likely go nowhere this year?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, Freddie's worked with young teams before, I guess. He's worked with the, you know, when he was down with the Marlins. I don't know. Maybe they think that he's a good guy to kind of shepherd this team through these next couple of years. But I mean, do you, I mean, in, but in that sense, do you think that they're going to punish him after all this is over, that these, this drudgery that will be this next couple of years, that they're going to all of a sudden be like, oh, okay, well, the end result of that is you're fired?
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of ways to look at it, right? They could say, okay, you know, it ends up the Braves win something in the 70 game range this year. And they're like, oh, my God, all the collapses plus 2 70-win teams in a row. We have to let him go. And then you bring in a new guy to start create some excitement as it's the last year of Turner Field and heading toward Cobb County. Or, much like the explanation was this year, poorly constructed team, a la, you know, via Frank Wren. This year they explain, well, it was a rebuilding year. We can't saddle Freddie with the blame, and we keep him. I mean, if they keep Freddie in for 2016, then it seems like he's going to continue to be the manager in Cobb County, right? I mean, it's either this is his last year, or we're going to have Freddie for a long time.
I'm going with the latter.
Yeah. All right, Kurt, a couple quick announcements. All of our new shows are also available on our YouTube channel, which you can find by searching Atlanta Baseball Talk on YouTube. And when you find us, please subscribe. Also, we have a Facebook fan page. Go out there and like us. It's at facebook.com/Atlanta Baseball Talk. So, Kurt, off the field, very exciting last week. John Smoltz ended up being a first ballot Hall of Famer. He will be inducted into the Hall of Fame this summer. You know, I was a little nervous that the amazing numbers for a starter and amazing numbers for closer, but not, you know, equal to your typical starter or closer, would hurt him and he wouldn't get in first year. But I'm glad that the committee saw to do it right. And, you know, it's just great. You know, I'm thrilled that the big three in Glavine, Smoltz, and Maddux are all getting in close to one another. And, you know, we've loved Smoltz forever. You know, Maddux was that appointment television guy and just an artist, and Glavine the heart and soul, and, you know, the one who brought us the World Series ring. But Smoltz was always the guy for me that if I needed to pick one guy in a one game, you know, do or die, it would be Smoltz.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the best postseason pitchers in the history of baseball. There's really no getting around that. I mean, his numbers are there to prove it. And yeah, he was the fire, and I've said it 1,000 times. I mean, his elbow cost us at least one world championship, maybe two. So Yeah, it's great to have him in there. I would be curious to see if there's ever been a team that will have five Hall of Famers, including the manager.
Yeah.
That could have only won one World Series, but I digress. Yeah, it's exciting. And I kind of now wish I had tried to get up to Cooperstown last year, because I looked at when it is this year, and I cannot physically go this year, but it would be fun to be part of one of these with one of these players that we all watched for so long with such awe, to be enshrined in the Hall of Fame. And I think it's very telling that despite the only one world championship, that at least in baseball circles, the run that the Braves had and the excellence that they showed, they're getting credit for it in that regard, you know, that they're not holding it against the Braves that they only won one World Series.
Yeah.
Unlike me.
You know, the only sort of downside of this whole thing is that Smoltz is going to go in with a Cardinals cap.
I thought you were going to say he's going to make two fart jokes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the over-under is two, man. I don't know. All right. So, Kurt, a lot of small moves happened in December since we last recorded a show. So let's go back and take a look at them. So A.J. Pierzynski is now the backup catcher and the mentor to Betancourt. David Ross went to the Cubs, by the way, who I think we're all rooting to be that guy. So, Kurt, how do you feel about having the most hated man in baseball on the team?
The most hated man who just is coming off his worst offensive season in his career.
Yeah, that guy.
It seems to fit really where the Braves are right now in my book.
So, you know, our buddy Kenneth is a diehard Red Sox fan, and Pierzynski was a Red Sox, you know, started the year on the Red Sox last year. They DFA'd him. So shortly after the trade was announced, Kenneth sent me a text, and it said, I quote, "Giant a-hole with a huge hole in his swing. You will hate him." So that's exciting.
Sweet.
Yeah, exactly.
So at least he's a jerk.
Yeah. You know, and DOB had an article interview with him a couple of days ago, and he's like, "Look, I'm just there fighting for my teammates."
Yeah.
And DOB talked about he's the proverbial, you want him in the foxhole with you. You know, to me, it's like, will all his fire and all that stuff, will he be a force for good or a force for evil? And some of it, I think, will depend on how the team sort of performs and how they respond to Freddie and if they kind of, you know, lose it or not.
Yeah. Well, there's no doubt that the Braves, and for a good period of time, have needed somebody in the clubhouse that is a bomb thrower.
Right. I just hope that he's a bomb thrower with, you know, ultimately sort of, you know, for the, you know, a force of good.
Sure.
Like he can be a bomb thrower and just tear that place apart.
I don't want him getting in fights with Terry Pendleton or something like that.
Exactly. That would be terrible.
Or do I?
All right. So, Shreve and Carpenter went to the Yankees for, you know, he was supposed to be the next big thing, but it hasn't happened yet. We mentioned him, Manny Banuelos.
Insert name that the Braves just picked up in the offseason here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one thing I read, and I'm sorry, I can't remember the guy's name, but someone who had been part of the Yankees front office while Banuelos was coming up through the ranks, who is now part of the Braves front office, I think it may have been like Gandhi or one of those guys, one of the blogs, was talking about, you know, you got to figure that sort of inside information helped lead to that trade. And, you know, that may sort of speak to the potential that we may still see out of that guy.
Yeah. Any thoughts on losing Shreve? I mean, he showed a lot of promise in a very short window.
You know,
just another one of these guys.
It's just another one of these guys. You know, a decent GM finds those guys.
Yeah.
And Carpenter, God, he was great at times, but I never can really get past the fifth game and the fourth game, I guess.
And honestly, I don't know that he could either. So.
Yeah, exactly. So we also signed former Pirates star reliever Jason Grilly to go with the other ancient, used-to-be-great reliever Jim Johnson. So what is your confidence level that these guys are going to work out?
I think they'll be spotty, you know. I think they'll have moments where we're like, oh, here it is, he's got it. And then the next time they come out, they'll, you know, be gasoline on a on a fire. So,
boy, for Roger to really work his magic on those two, though, it would be amazing. I mean, the bullpen would be amazing if those guys were even, 75% of what they were.
Having like five closers.
Yeah, exactly. And then one other guy that we didn't mention at all was we traded Kubica and Hyatt to, a pitcher and
I thought our future third baseman at one point.
Well, exactly. And that's who, Rio Ruiz has become now.
Right.
For Angels top 10 prospect Ricardo Sanchez. And again, a steal if that works, but he's years away. He's like 17.
Yeah. Right. And did you mention Josh Outman?
No, I didn't. Right. Josh Outman, lefty reliever who, out goes Shreve, in comes Josh Outman.
And Outman had a nice season last year.
He really
so
did. Yeah.
That's nice kind of one of the ones that might be a nice little signing.
Yep. All right. So it looks like the competition for the fifth spot will be Wandy Rodriguez, who we'd mentioned, David Hale, of course, Banuelos. Chin-Ming Wong, who we forgot to mention, they signed him like in November.
Wong.
Yeah. I've also seen that James Russell, the lefty reliever who couldn't get lefties out last year, is supposed to be competing for that spot. I've seen that in a couple articles. So just take a guess. Who do you think's the fifth starter next year, at least at the start of the season?
God, I'm going to go Wong. Just because I'm going to enjoy saying his name a lot on the show, if it is. and I think they want to keep Hale as a long reliever. I don't know
I think that's right.
Banuelos, I think Wandy Rodriguez is just going to pitch for Gwinnett until they absolutely have no other choice.
Well, right. I mean, it's a minor league deal with no guaranteed money unless they put him on the major league roster. I suppose part of it. Surely, I haven't seen all the turns, but surely they'll say, look, Wandy, we're not putting you on the major league roster. And I bet he has an out to say, well, then, just release me and see if I can get signed elsewhere. I'm going to go with Banuelos. I think he's going to come in and just blow everyone's socks off.
And not, what's his face? Fultinovich. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I bet he's going to start in Gwinnett. I mean, it seems a little unlikely that in 2 months they're going to figure out all his command stuff, All right, so Kurt, let's end with this. As currently constructed, we obviously don't know what's going to happen in left field. I can't even – there are so many pieces in the lineup that I can't figure out where anyone goes. But given what we know today, how many wins for the 2015 Braves?
Well, that's the other question is who – and you think they're going to sign a left fielder. I do not.
Okay, I do.
And do you think Kiaspo is the starting second baseman?
Yeah, I think he is until Peraza comes.
And obviously, BJ is going to get the starting center fielder job until the shortest string possible is pulled and he gets...
He's marooned on the bench.
Yeah, and you don't think it's going to be Cunningham or somebody in left field?
I just don't. I mean, obviously, if they don't sign someone, it'll be Cunningham or Turdoslovich, but I just don't
see... Or that the Cuban guy.
Right.
Toscano. I'm going to, and I think that what's going to be overlooked in all of this is the wear and tear that I fear is going to be implied and imparted on our young starting pitching staff. We heard Irvin Magic Johnson last year talking about Irvin Santana talking about. how he felt like he had to go and throw a shutout every single time he pitched. And I can't imagine that atmosphere is conducive for being a good pitcher and not putting extra stress on you and your pitching arm and everything else when you're trying to squeeze the ball so tight to throw it 1,000 miles an hour and get 10 guys out at one time, which is because they know that they're not getting, nobody's going to be scoring any runs for them. So this is going to be like a dog year for these young pitchers because of the wear and tear that they're going to have to pitch in these 2-1 games every single time.
But so Kurt, do you think it is an impossibility that the Braves score more runs in 2015 than they did in 2014?
I wouldn't say an impossibility because of how terrible they scored runs last year.
That's the thing. The offense was so unwatchable for most of the season. I mean, really for most of the season, and really every day for like the last half of the season.
But I mean, you did just trade away your three biggest offensive pieces, or three of the top five, whatever it might have been. And I think that also they're going to have to go through a transition this year where their offense is completely changed.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of these guys that are still hanging around, Simmons, Chris Johnson, BJ, they're going to have to learn to kind of approach the game differently on the offensive side. And Freddie, I guess, as well. So I'm going to go, all that being said, I'm going 79 wins.
Okay, but 79 is what we won in 2014.
Yeah, well, I think that's,
wow, all right. So I'm going to go 74. I think that this is a game we will play throughout spring training, frankly, but mark it down. This is the first time we're doing it. All right, Curtis, that is the show. So we will be back the rest of this month and February as more moves happen, and then we'll start back up weekly in March as we get close to opening day. So please make sure you are subscribed to our YouTube channel as well as iTunes or Stitcher so that you don't miss any of our shows. Check us out at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com for past shows, to check out our blogs and to post in our comment section. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk and to like us on Facebook. Thanks again for listening, everyone, and go Braves!
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com.
Had to admit the problem.